This is Jay Sekulow. Breaking news. The embassy in Jerusalem opened.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
In the last 7 years, the Middle East went through an earthquake.
Today, the group Hamas declared a day of rage, urging attacks on Israelis.
If you step back and look at the picture, you can see the circle enclosing around Israel.
This conflict has never been about establishing a Palestinian state. It's always been about the existence of a Jewish state.
Jewish wedding in Israel interrupted by air raid sirens.
Human shielding pays today. Why did you put the rocket there next to the school? That's the person that committed a crime against humanity.
BDS is a new form of anti-Semitism. The call to boycott the state of Israel, to divest investment from the state of Israel.
Graphic new video of violent protests and terror attacks coming out of Israel.
These are the same people who literally glorify and incentivize terrorists.
They pay them. They pay the terrorist families to kill Jews. That messaging will continue. So we've got to be prepared to be aggressive in fighting it anytime it raises.
People say BDS, boycott, divestment, sanctions. How come is it that you automatically mean Israel?
The entire conception of this is to destroy Israel by turning Israel into an oppressor and using all these different instrumentalities, not just warfare on the battlefield, but lawfare.
When they say that Israel should be wiped out, that they mean it?
I don't have the luxury not to believe it.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, welcome to the broadcast, everyone. And this is a special day indeed, and that is the embassy, the United States Embassy in Israel has now been relocated to Jerusalem. What does that mean? It means the United States, back in December, recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. That was significant. That law had been on the books for 20 years, but no president had the guts to do it, and this president did. And what he did was not only recognize Jerusalem as the capital, but took the consulate in Jerusalem and converted it into the embassy. It's historically significant for two reasons. Number one, a sovereign nation, Israel, has the right to determine where its capital is. In this particular case, it has been Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the Jewish people, of the Jewish state of Israel. That's number one. Number two, we're just complying with international law, recognizing that a sovereign nation's capital is where that sovereign nation says its capital is. So this was also symbolically significant because it's not just the United States now. Later in the week, Guatemala is going to be recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and other governments are now saying they're going to do the same thing. So you've got this move. It takes this issue off the table. Now, on the broadcast today, we're talking about a case for Israel, protecting the promised land. And by the way, this is a special that we put together, but you can get the whole special on our website as well.
You can get that at acljfilms.com. Again, acljfilms.com will have that available. So you can find that right there. It's Protecting the Promised Land. It's a new full-length documentary by our team at ACLJ Films. Fantastic piece. You sit down, have a round table. We also have news pieces, round table with some of the leaders from Israel.
And it is now official, as we're coming to you today, the United States of America's embassy for the United States, for Israel, is now located in Jerusalem. This is something we've been working on for over 20 years.
Yeah, it's a big deal. It's a lot bigger deal than maybe even some have seen, as we've seen these big moves in the last 12, 24 months, or 12 months really, for Jerusalem. And we put together this piece at ACLJ Films that you're really going to enjoy. You're going to hear excerpts from that today throughout the rest of the show. However, if you want to see the full-length documentary that we've put together, all you have to do is go to acljfilms.com and follow the instructions on how to watch it, where to watch it. It'll all be available there again on acljfilms.com. And make sure you share that with your friends. Go share that link. It's something that they need to see. They need to know why it's important for Jerusalem to be the capital. They also need to know why it's important and why Israel and all these things happen in such a small country, and why it makes such a huge difference around the world. Again, that's at acljfilms.com.
All right, we're going to be back with more on this, including our special. This is a great program we've put together. What a week to celebrate Israel. What a week to celebrate the United States recognition of Jerusalem as the capital with the move of the embassy. Back with more in a moment. Jerusalem. There's no place on earth like it. It seems this extraordinary city is always in the news, but that's especially true right now. All this month, TBN is celebrating the 70th anniversary of Israel's founding and the historic move of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, recognizing this holy, ancient city as Israel's true capital. It's a bold and courageous move, one that has ignited a firestorm of criticism around the world. Helping you understand why is the focus of my brand new book, Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. I've argued numerous cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. And I've defended Israel before the United Nations and the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Now in my new book, I'm bringing you the powerful arguments and the insights necessary for you to understand the importance of defending Israel. I'm proud to have partnered with TBN in bringing you this book. From our beginning, TBN has been proclaiming the truth about Israel to the entire world. For this month only, TBN will send you my new book in appreciation for your best gift of support for the Israel-honoring outreaches of TBN. Frankly, the people of Israel need our support now more than ever. That's why I believe this book may be the most important book I've ever written or ever will write. Vicious anti-Israel sentiment and boycotts are spreading like a cancer around the world. The goal? Isolate and weaken Israel. For some, the objective is to wipe her from the map completely. We cannot let that happen. Call, click, or write today to receive this book and join us as we fight the rising tide of distortions and lies with biblical truth about this miraculous nation and her eternal capital, Jerusalem.
From New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow comes his new book, Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Available on TBN.org. That's TBN.org.
To the broadcast, everyone, is today's the day that the embassy is officially moved to Jerusalem. We've got special programming on this entire issue, the case for defending the promised land.
Graphic new video of violent protests and terror attacks coming out of Israel.
They have a gender apartheid inside Gaza. Christians are evacuating because churches are being burned. Their doctrine is fascist and genocidal against Jews.
Today, the group Hamas declared a day of rage, urging attacks on Israelis.
Peace has no greater enemy than the forces of militant Islam.
At any moment, you know, these rockets and missiles on the border with Lebanon could be sprung and fired against Israel.
Iran gets nuclear weapons, Saudi Arabia will, Egypt will, Turkey, perhaps others. So in 5 to 10 years, you could have a multipolar nuclear Middle East with half a dozen countries with nuclear weapons. That is a formula for insecurity.
And Al-Qaeda are these terrorist groups with the goal of destroying the West.
We got a multiple officers here. We got officers running here, back eastbound, chasing, now on foot.
So we understand people are scared, and we understand that there's concern that there may be more folks out there.
When they say that Israel should be wiped out, that they mean it?
I don't have the luxury not to believe this.
Israel's right to exist has been a cornerstone for the ACLJ since its inception. With an office in the heart of Jerusalem, ACLJ continues to be a leader in the advocacy for the Jewish state of Israel. Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow has brought together ACLJ's leading experts from around the globe to present Protecting the Promised Land, the case for Israel.
We just heard death to America, death to Israel. in the opening of this documentary. I want to start with you, David Benjamin, first. You served in the Israeli Defense Forces, still do, is in the reserves. You're dealing with international law issues. But the death to America, death to Israel, has been the thematic of these groups in the region. What is the situation in the region right now as you see it?
Well, I would say if they don't mean it, why are they making such an effort to create this buildup just about on every frontier that Israel has, particularly in the north now in Syria? In Lebanon, it's not a new story. You have Hezbollah now with an arsenal of in the region of 140,000 rockets, all of them from Iran. You have the Houthi situation in Saudi Arabia now creeping up from the southern front. You have Hamas in Gaza, who are being supported by Iran. If you step back and look at the picture, you can see the circle enclosing around Israel and think, well, why make the effort if they're not being serious about carrying out their threats?
So, which raises the next issue, Rami, and that is the nature of the threat and the Iran factor. Iran has become a major player in the region now, and there's a history to this that a lot of people do not know.
Well, if you come from the intelligence field where I come from, we always have to measure intent and capabilities. And regarding the intent of the Iranians, we just heard death to America, and we hear it from their leaders for many, many years. Regarding the capabilities, they're trying to develop atom bombs in order to rule the world. Now, going back to what David has been saying, the Iranians have been trying to take over the Middle East, get all the way up to the Mediterranean, just like they used to rule that region 2,500 years ago. And when you listen to the Iranians and you look at their actions, the Houthis are Shiites in Yemen that are shooting missiles at Riyadh's airports and are trying to take over Bab al-Mandeb straits in the sea in order to control the oil flow to the west. So when you look at Syria, when you look at Lebanon, when you look at what they're doing with Hamas in the south, you understand that they mean business when they speak about death to America, and they mean business when
Iranians have stated openly, simply, openly, that they want to destroy the state of Israel. Period. Exclamation point.
They speak of illegitimacy in the name of God. From Iran, from Hezbollah, and from Hamas, you hear that it's a religious commandment that Israel should not exist, that a non-Muslim state cannot be here. If this has the upper hand, this trend, it's going to be tougher. This layer of religious fanaticism on top of political debates makes debates almost without a resolution, because, you know, gods never compromise. People do.
You're dealing with a regime headed up by a religious fanatic. The Ayatollah in Iran has a religious view that has no place for the state of Israel, fellow Muslims who disagree with him, and our country. He is a religious Nazi. On the day we voted on the Iran nuclear deal, he tweeted out, Allah willing, Israel won't exist in 25 years.
Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, posted incendiary comments about Israel. He flatly predicted that Israel won't be around 25 years from now.
And he warned that between now and then, Israel would have to worry about what he called the, quote, spirit of fighting heroism and jihad.
Today, after 2 years of negotiations, the United States, together with our international partners, has achieved something that decades of animosity has not. A comprehensive, long-term deal with Iran that will prevent it from obtaining a nuclear weapon.
A bad deal is worse than no deal. We need to have a good deal here.
This deal will not stop Iran from getting a bomb. This deal will all but guarantee it.
The Iranian nuclear deal may actually be worse than we originally imagined.
I think the deal is absolutely horrible for us, but it's really, really bad for Israel.
And we're handing over hundreds of billions of dollars in sanctions relief.
Iran is going to have access to $150 billion in assets.
Israelis have been telling us, you know, this kind of deal is giving Iran the legitimacy to enrich uranium.
Once Iran is able to perform a nuclear test, it would have a shield, a nuclear mushroom all over Iran that would prevent deter the US and Israel from doing anything to retaliate against Iran or work against Iran when it's supposed jihadist groups in the Middle East or worldwide.
If Iran gets nuclear weapons, Saudi Arabia will, Egypt will, Turkey, perhaps others. So in 5 to 10 years, you could have a multipolar nuclear Middle East with half a dozen countries with nuclear weapons. That is a formula for insecurity.
Think of how arrogant Hezbollah will act and Hamas if Iran wins and it gets nuclear. So I think the stakes are very high.
If Iran gets the bomb, even if it doesn't use it, it would alter profoundly the history of the Middle East.
Iran's rulers promised to destroy my country, murder my people, and the response from this body, the response from nearly every one of the governments represented here has been absolutely nothing. Utter silence. Deafening silence.
We have to talk about America's interests in the region, and that starting with our defense as a country of Israel and why it's strategically important.
Absolutely. I was at a meeting not long ago, within the last year, year and a half, with the Egyptian consul in New York. And it was a meeting of members of Congress and a couple of people from think tanks. And the ambassador, he was pleading with us, saying, why don't you see the threat? He said, why don't you see the threat from the region? It's a threat to your country. It's a threat to your country before any other country. He said, we see it. We know we have Egyptian nationals in this country, and they go to mosques where they're being radicalized. And we know if Iran gets this nuclear deal, which they now have, right, we will absolutely have to get nuclear weapons. The Saudis will absolutely have to get nuclear weapons because, you know, and here's how you know the truth. Israel has had a nuclear capability, you know, the secret that everyone knows, for decades. And there's not been an arms race. There's not been a nuclear race in the Middle East because they know Israel will not first launch. Israel just wants a defensive capability. But they know that's not true about Iran. So first, you know that Iran will use it. The second thing is Iran is developing intercontinental ballistic missiles not to reach Israel, but to reach us in this country.
Let's talk, Mark, about this. Israel's an ally of the United States, but this ongoing conflict, you look at it historically, over the modern time of Israel's existence, the last 70 years, this ongoing conflict has been continuous. And the fact is, sometimes it's different players coming to the forefront. Now it's Iran. But the regional conflict focused on Israel, there's a historic record that is indisputable.
All right, we'll be back with more from our film, Protecting the Promised Land, which again, full-length film available right now on acljfilms.com. We'll be right back.
Jerusalem, there's no place on earth like it. It seems this extraordinary city is always in the news, but that's especially true right now. All this month, TBN is celebrating the 70th anniversary of Israel's founding and the historic move of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, recognizing this holy, ancient city as Israel's true capital. It's a bold and courageous move, one that has ignited a firestorm of criticism around the world. Helping you understand why is the focus of my brand new book, Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. I've argued numerous cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. And I've defended Israel before the United Nations and the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Now in my new book, I'm bringing you the powerful arguments and the insights necessary for you to understand the importance of defending Israel. I'm proud to have partnered with TBN in bringing you this book. From our beginning, TBN has been proclaiming the truth about Israel to the entire world. For this month only, TBN will send you my new book in appreciation for your best gift of support for the Israel-honoring outreaches of TBN. Frankly, the people of Israel need our support now more than ever. That's why I believe this book may be the most important book I've ever written or ever will write. Vicious anti-Israel sentiment and boycotts are spreading like a cancer around the world. The goal? Isolate and weaken Israel. For some, the objective is to wipe her from the map completely. We cannot let that happen. Call, click, or write today to receive this book and join us as we fight the rising tide of distortions and lies with biblical truth about this miraculous nation and her eternal capital, Jerusalem.
From New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow comes his new book, Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Available on TBN.org. That's TBN.org.
to the broadcast, everyone. As today's the day that the embassy has officially moved to Jerusalem, we've got special programming on this entire issue, the case for defending the Promised Land.
If you just look at the modern era, from 1920, Israel's given this wonderful small area for close settlement of the land in the San Remo Treaty. And then in 1922, the League of Nations sets up a mandate. Israel's finally gonna have a place where Jews can come and settle. And then 78% of it is lopped off and given to Transjordan. And you think, all right, fine, the Jews will remain in that last 22%. Then the first plan, the Peel Commission, gives 80% of that they try to give away, and Jews will have 20%. Throughout history, at every single point in time, all people have tried to do is cut Israel into smaller and smaller pieces. And eventually, the time came in 1948, and again in 67, and again in 73, and we see it again today. They just, you know what, forget anything, let's just wipe them off the map. And yes, the players keep on changing, but unfortunately, the ideology behind it has never been about peace.
There's an interesting dynamic with all this, though, and that is that the United States has a strategic interest. What is new is what the region is starting to shape like, the look of the region as far as who the players are. So I want to talk about that for a minute. There's been wars. Mark just laid out some of those wars. But then it's always, there's like the war between wars.
You know, in the last 7 years, the Middle East went through an earthquake. Countries have been turned apart. If you look at what happened in Sudan, if you look at what happened in Egypt, if you look at what happened in even in the Palestinian Authority, a lot of changes. Israel has to face new type of enemies. The war, the countries became proxies of Iran, and Israel has to face threats from different terrorist groups, and we call it stealth wars. And the reason we're fighting those stealth wars, which is an everyday fight, is to prevent the next war.
So when you're engaging in a stealth war, and you're the lawyer advising the military, you face different kind of challenges. The other side is not engaging in the laws of armed conflict when they engage. They use civilians as targets. This is part and parcel of how they operate. So what does that put on you as the lawyer representing Israeli military?
You've touched on a crucial legal point, because once upon a time, people spoke about the law of war. And the idea was that applies in situations where armies, entire armies, clash against one another. And these situations in between, the war between wars, as Rami has put it, what law actually applies there? And it really took Israel to stick its neck out initially and say, you know, these are also armed conflicts. These are wars just on a lower intensity. We need to apply the same laws. We can't get by, as much of the world has expected in the past, on just applying regular principles, say, of criminal law. The idea that criminals, terrorists are criminals, you have to arrest them, put them on trial. You can't apply that to an organization like Hezbollah, which is a more powerful military than most countries on earth, or even Hamas. So legally, that has had, that has been very significant, that the law of war is actually, it's relevant on all different levels of intensity, including in the war between wars.
But right over there and right over there are two villages controlled by Hezbollah, and we've got, coming in our background right now, Jeeps from the Israeli Defense Force. This is the blue line. How significant of a zone is this? How dangerous of a zone
is
this?
Well, you know, I must say that my experience for the past 30 years, you know, I've been to this movie before.
Yeah.
Maybe the difference is now it's a 3D movie with so many other forces involved. But this is a security border in Israel. There's peace now. It's a fragile peace. It's a deceptive peace.
Why do you say, we talked about that before. Why deceptive peace?
It's deceptive because at any moment, you know, these 40,000 rockets and missiles on the border with Lebanon could, you know, be sprung and fired against Israel.
After the war, the Lebanon army took place on the forts and on the border. We see a lot of movement of the UN, but we know to the citizen vehicles that that the Hezbollah owns, that we know they're looking out, and we know they're preparing for the next battle day.
We're asserting that Iran is actually engaging in this war with through Hezbollah. Is that the sense that you have as your training?
Sure, that's what we learn also. All the weapons, the training, is all Iranian money and techniques.
You can find the Iranian regime fingerprints everywhere. In Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Lebanon, in the Palestinian arena, in Yemen, in South America.
In the north, we have Iran. Oh, Hezbollah, which is
an Iranian division on our border, practically and literally and in every sense, directed directly from Iran.
When you look at your neighbors, David, as an Israeli, you've got the leadership of Syria being propped up right now by the Russians and the Iranians. Yet you have the Sunnis in the form of ISIS trying to gain a foothold. And you're a lawyer that gives legal advice to the military in Israel, and you've got a border with Syria.
Yeah.
What are you facing?
You know, I'd like to quote the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. He said, "My enemy's enemy is my enemy."
Yeah.
I think that so perfectly sums up the situation which is developing in Syria, which is over the years. It's really complicated. It raises all sorts of legal questions about who exactly is the enemy, who's attacking you, who isn't attacking you at any given time. The map can actually change.
Rami, looking at it diplomatically, because you have to look at it diplomatically, there has been a realignment, a strategic realignment within the region. I mean, 20 years ago, the thought that the Israelis and the Saudis would have the kind of relationship they now have, completely unexpected. And it is the common enemy. You deal with Jordan and Egypt. What is the sense when you're dealing with those world leaders as they view Israel right now? How does al-Sisi in Egypt view Israel? How does Abdullah, King Abdullah in Jordan view Israel right now?
I was actually a guest of the King of Jordan in Amman, Abdullah, about 3 years ago. And he was speaking about the Arab Spring as the Arab Winter. He saw what's happening. He saw ISIS coming to its border from the Syrian side. He saw ISIS coming to his borders from the Iraqi side. And he felt very threatened about it. Sisi sees, just spoke yesterday about the peace with Israel. It's 40 years since Sadat came to Israel, just this week. Sisi spoke about the peace with Israel as a blessing to Egypt and to the region. I believe that if we go back to the Iranian strategy that has been revealed to take over the Middle East, actually a lot of people believe that Iran wants to take over Mecca because of religious reasons. So if you take the intentions of Iran and you look at the abilities of Israel, today the Arabs, the Sunni countries, are looking at Israel's abilities to intercept missiles, for example, which we learned to do after the Gaza wars. They look at Israel's ability to defend itself, and they look at the Israeli interest to stop the Iranians. They saw the Israel war in 2006, the second Lebanon war with Hezbollah. They saw our different wars in Gaza. They saw the ability that we have. They received some of our technologies. So today, both Sisi and Abdullah and the Gulf states leaders understand that in order to stop Iran, we have to work together.
All right, we'll be back with more from our film, Protecting the Promised Land, which again, full-length film available right now on acljfilms.com. We'll be right back.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. As today's the day that the embassy has officially moved to Jerusalem, we've got special programming on this entire issue, the case for defending the Promised Land.
This is the frontline position of Iran in this region. Frontline, the best equipped army, I would say, forces they have here, well trained, with over 40,000 missiles directed against Israel, covering maybe two-thirds of the state of Israel, and in the future, probably the whole state of Israel. Iran's forward forces are here. They don't need the Shihab missiles from Tehran. They don't need even yet to have nuclear weapons. They could threaten Israel. They could threaten the West by simply sitting in places where they can actually turn the Middle East into one big war.
Today, when we speak about the threat coming from 2,500 kilometers with, you know, ballistic missiles, no precise ballistic missiles that will be aimed on our, you know, civilian population. And God forbid, I hope will never happen, but potentially with the warheads of, weapons of mass destruction, then this is something that you cannot exactly predict how it's going to happen.
The thing that some people don't talk about as much as the nuclear program is their missile program. Just a few weeks ago, they saw maybe a 30-meter, that would be a 90-foot missile in the desert in Iran. And so not only are they developing a nuclear program to get a nuclear bomb, but they're also developing missiles, intercontinental ballistic missiles, that could reach not only Europe, but the east coast of the United States. And so it's, and this is what Israeli officials have told us many, many times, it's not only a threat to Israel, it's a threat to the United States.
Jihadists consider Israel as a minor Satan, the great Satan, they call it America. It's actually the Western civilization. And when they call to wipe Israel off the map of the earth, they claim that they have to do it on the way to defeat the West.
Now we're seeing, of course, the rise of Islamic extremism.
لتحقيق غايتهم وإن أردتم موعود الله فجاهدوا في سبيل الله.
I think this has been the dream that one day the caliphate would be reestablished, which is basically this Islamic empire ruled under Islamic Sharia law. This is something they had dreamed about, and now their dream has come true. And I think it's called ripples throughout the Islamic world, where whether it's in Libya or the Sinai Peninsula, as far away as the Philippines, it's sort of fueled the imagination of many Muslims and now are pledging allegiance to ISIS.
Their long-range goal to kick the Jewish people into the ocean. No place for, you know, negotiations. They're just there to do bad things.
The goal for ISIS and many of these jihadi groups is to eventually take over Jerusalem and have that as the capital of their future caliphate. And so Destination Jerusalem, that's exactly where they're heading.
As you've looked at the situation over the years, your sense today, what's your sense of where we are?
We're at a point where the issue has exploded in terms of consciousness of people now. I think we need to achieve a position where we're at least seeing it flatlining. Every week that goes by, we see a different news report about a different situation. And basically, we've had our eyes closed to this for decades, and we've all suddenly woken up and thought, oh my goodness, how did we get here, and how do we get ourselves out of the situation we're in?
Two men entered the building in the centre of the French capital late this morning and began firing. By the time they'd stopped, at least 12 people were dead. Many others were seriously injured.
Famed for its cafe culture, Parisians enjoying their Friday evening were sitting ducks for the terrorists. Parisians are scarcely able to believe the multiple atrocities which happened across their city. Islamic State has claimed responsibility for the attacks.
We are in pursuit of the suspect vehicle. We've got shots fired out the back window.
They are both armed with assault rifles. They are both armed with handguns.
Gunfire erupted. You could hear it from the outside. And in the midst of the attack, the killer himself. Authorities say he called 911 to pledge his allegiance to the terror group ISIS.
All right, we'll be back with more from our film, Protecting the Promised Land, which again, full-length film available right now on acljfilms.com. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Jerusalem, there's no place on earth like it. It seems this extraordinary city is always in the news, but that's especially true right now. All this month, TBN is celebrating the 70th anniversary of Israel's founding and the historic move of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, recognizing this holy, ancient city as Israel's true capital. It's a bold and courageous move, one that has ignited a firestorm of criticism around the world. Helping you understand why is the focus of my brand new book, Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. I've argued numerous cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. And I've defended Israel before the United Nations and the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Now in my new book, I'm bringing you the powerful arguments and the insights necessary for you to understand the importance of defending Israel. I'm proud to have partnered with TBN in bringing you this book. From our beginning, TBN has been proclaiming the truth about Israel to the entire world. For this month only, TBN will send you my new book in appreciation for your best gift of support for the Israel-honoring outreaches of TBN. Frankly, the people of Israel need our support now more than ever. That's why I believe this book may be the most important book I've ever written or ever will write. Vicious anti-Israel sentiment and boycotts are spreading like a cancer around the world. The goal? Isolate and weaken Israel. For some, the objective is to wipe her from the map completely. We cannot let that happen. Call, click, or write today to receive this book and join us as we fight the rising tide of distortions and lies with biblical truth about this miraculous nation and her eternal capital, Jerusalem.
From New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow comes his new book, Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Available on TBN.org. That's TBN.org.
Everyone, is today's the day that the embassy has officially moved to Jerusalem. We've got special programming on this entire issue, the case for defending the promised land.
Ethnic cleansing, which Israel continues to commit, is a crime against humanity.
They have no regard themselves for international humanitarian law. That they place a completely different and much lower value on Palestinian life compared to Israeli life.
The border between Israel and the Gaza Strip illuminated by the flames of war. Video released by the Israeli military shows various Hamas militants stealthily emerging from the Mediterranean Sea, guns in hand, ready to attack.
In 2000-2001, Israel offered to end the occupation, to create a two-state solution. Arafat said no. In 2007, Olmert offered to end the occupation, create a two-state solution. Abbas did not respond. You have to remember that Israel has, since 1948, favored the two-state solution.
But this conflict has never been about the settlements or about establishing a Palestinian state. It's always been about the existence of a Jewish state.
Hamas has been acting to build up its military force through tunnels where they smuggle weapons, where they put all their rockets there.
Are you shocked as I am about the level of sophistication? They're using Israeli mortar, Israeli electricity, and instead of helping the Palestinian people, what are they doing? They're building, you know, tunnels so they can go into Israel and kill innocent people.
Exactly. No infrastructure, no buildings, no hospitals, nothing, just tunnels to destroy us.
The Palestinian Islamic Jihad, see, they used this in the last war, and they're prepared to use it in the next.
Many moments of normalcy cut short. One Jewish wedding in Israel interrupted by air raid sirens.
You're glorifying terrorism. Shame on you for doing
we
that.
We don't.
Shame on you for glorifying terrorism.
Shame on you for killing
Shame
you
on
thousands
you
of Palestinian
for
children.
Not saying we condemn all acts of terror, period.
We've had this situation, we talked about this with the lack of uniforms, it's a different kind of warfare. They're hiding out in villages.
Yes.
How do you go about defending your country when they're engaged in this kind of
activity?
Well,
like I said before, it's very hard. We try to learn on a daily basis what kind of movement is a citizen movement, what kind of movement doesn't serve any any cars except Hezbollah, and becomes a little war zone inside the village.
This new type of warfare we're fighting in the Middle East, asymmetrical wars, which have global ramifications. You see what happened the minute we launched the operation. You heard the whole Muslim world cry out, and this is part of the radical Islamic influence, not only in the Middle East, but throughout the Arab world. At the same time, you know, it's a very difficult decision. What do we do? Do we restrain ourselves, do nothing now, and then have to fight a bigger war? Or do we take the necessary action required in order to protect our citizens right now? And I think the Israeli government really had no choice. We didn't choose it.
They call the war that they're engaged in asymmetric warfare. They understand the firepower that the West has. Therefore, they have to do two things. They have to engage in terrorism and subversion as their modus operandi in the battlefield, but they also have to neutralize the superior military force of the West. Lawfare is the way they're going to do it.
When you see a situation like we are in, being attacked by thousands of rockets, they from Hamas, for years after we have left Gaza altogether, and then we defend ourselves in a short war of 2 or 3 weeks, and then we become the war criminals, this is really either ludicrous, or call it what adjective you want to add here, this is really abuse of law.
They've for years worked well with the international media. And so it's the same basic process. Instead of talking just to a favorite reporter at CNN or something else, what they have to do here is feed material to human rights organizations or to the UN.
As we are challenged by our enemies, by this kind of activities, using their populations, their civilians as human shield, and being aware from the international community, misunderstanding in certain cases and hypocrisy in other cases, being ready to manipulate it by our adversary.
Every war is fought in two places at the same time, in the battlefield and on the screen. To take paraphrase Shakespeare, all the world's a screen, and you get your information on the screen. If you lose the screen, you may lose the war.
The phrase is called lawfare. It's a term that describes exploiting existing legal systems to use as a weapon against one's opponents in an effort to damage or delegitimize them. In the context of Israel, this is an attempt to use international organizations, international tribunals, to do just that, delegitimize the Jewish state. So I want to spend some time talking about lawfare. David, you said that the first act of lawfare takes place on the battlefield.
Absolutely. Adversaries that Israel has, like Hezbollah in the north, Hamas in Gaza, what they do is try and draw Israel into situations which are going to cause massive civilian casualties. They do that by using human shields. The tragedy is that insofar as the international community has been buying into this and accepting this and painting Israel as being the bad guy for defending itself against the potential massive missile attacks, this is incentivizing this conduct even more. Human shielding pays today. And at the bottom line of that is more and more civilian casualties.
Jordan, you have studied the whole issue of what I would call the issue of war crimes. It's now called crimes against humanity. They'll come up with different phrases. But there is this sense that Israel is the primary culprit. That's what's seen in the body politic in world opinion.
Yeah, and the belligerents, if you will, really should be the people putting civilians in harm's way intentionally. It's not those who are defending themselves against that group, but it's the people like it's Hamas or Hezbollah and their commanders who are benefiting, and the people who go out and speak for them, who are saying, oh, look what's happening to these civilians. Why did you put the rocket there next to the school? That's the person that committed actually an act of war or a crime against humanity by putting the child there, a minor there who has no decision point on this whatsoever. Those are illegal acts that the world has acknowledged as wrong or evil to the point where we would actually prosecute it. And yeah, it's turned around. But at a point, you can't just take the incoming anymore. You have to respond.
This is the front line also of the war against Israel in so many ways.
And I know we work on this here at ACLJ in terms of the law aspect and also in terms of what you do being out there and delivering a message, which is so important, because we have a generation that's growing up. The narrative they've gotten is false. The narrative they've gotten is that Israel is an illegal occupier. And therefore, anything Israel does starts off in the wrong. Right, because they're trying to maintain an illegal presence. That's not true, and it's perverse. And look, the history of anti-Semitism, which leads to Jewish destruction, has been the same since the Bible. Right, we know the Pharaoh begins it, but it never changes. There's a blood libel. The term blood libel is created about the way the Jews have been treated around the world, and now the corporate body of Jews is the state of Israel. And so now we have blood libels about Israel, and they play out in diplomacy, in the law, especially in international circles. And this is playing out as a way to turn Israel into a pariah state. And exactly what David's talking about in terms of human shields, they know that people will fall prey to this and are gullible for this. And this is the front in which Israel is fighting. It's not and it comes down to time. Israel's hands to physically defend itself against its attacks by using all these instrumentalities around the world.
I just want to also make it clear that we're not only talking about international reform. We at ACLJ, right. We've already defended one major federal case in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Against the state of Israel. We're defending another one right now. And the most, incredibly enough, the most important weapon in their arsenal right now is imprecision. Everyone knows in technological fields, precision in language is important, otherwise your program won't compile. It's more dangerous in law because the program might still compile even if it's wrong,
right.
And people don't catch those imprecisions. And so, again, conflating these terms, it's coming to America now as well. We have to be very careful.
I actually look at the issue when we talk about the lawsuit you're talking about that we defended in U.S. District Court in Washington, but yet again, it's kind of an international tribunal in this sense. It's the ability to utilize legal systems there now in the United States. There it could be in France, it could be in the United Kingdom, but we experienced it in the United States, where we had to go to the court to defend what was, in our view, a ridiculous lawsuit, 200 pages thick. But we had to litigate that case for over a year to get it to a resolution. Of course, now it's being appealed. All of that being done for one purpose and one purpose only, delegitimize Israel. Literally in this litigation, they were attempting to, and I'm going to get into more of this in a moment, re-litigate, so to speak, the entire Arab-Palestinian-Israel conflict. I mean, we haven't even touched on the Palestinian Authority yet, which is what I want to get to here. Because the Palestinian Authority is a bit of a misnomer. And that is, people will say, well, can't we have two sides sit down and negotiate peace? People want to avoid war. They want to avoid conflict. Can't you just have two sides come down and negotiate peace? The problem is in the Middle East, specifically within the situation with the Israelis and the Palestinian Authority, again, you better think nine-dimensionally because there's not just two sides there.
All right, we'll be back with more from our film, Protecting the Promised Land, which again, full-length film available right now on acljfilms.com. We'll be right back.
Jerusalem, there's no place on earth like it. It seems this extraordinary city is always in the news, but that's especially true right now. All this month, TBN is celebrating the 70th anniversary of Israel's founding and the historic move of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, recognizing this holy, ancient city as Israel's true capital. It's a bold and courageous move, one that has ignited a firestorm of criticism around the world. Helping you understand why is the focus of my brand new book, Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. I've argued numerous cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. And I've defended Israel before the United Nations and the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Now in my new book, I'm bringing you the powerful arguments and the insights necessary for you to understand the importance of defending Israel. I'm proud to have partnered with TBN in bringing you this book. From our beginning, TBN has been proclaiming the truth about Israel to the entire world. For this month only, TBN will send you my new book in appreciation for your best gift of support for the Israel-honoring outreaches of TBN. Frankly, the people of Israel need our support now more than ever. That's why I believe this book may be the most important book I've ever written or ever will write. Vicious anti-Israel sentiment and boycotts are spreading like a cancer around the world. The goal? Isolate and weaken Israel. For some, the objective is to wipe her from the map completely. We cannot let that happen. Call, click, or write today to receive this book and join us as we fight the rising tide of distortions and lies with biblical truth about this miraculous nation and her eternal capital, Jerusalem.
From New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow comes his new book, Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital. Available on tbn.org. That's tbn.org.
Broadcast, everyone, is today's the day that the embassy has officially moved to Jerusalem. We've got special programming on this entire issue, the case for defending the Promised Land.
So you've got, David, ISIS, you've got Hezbollah, you've got Hamas, and in Israel, you're dealing with all of that. And there's others. I mean, that's just the big three.
The big three.
Yeah. But you have to deal with that as a country. And you've got to give advice to the military on how to engage it.
I think lawfare begins on the battlefield. I think what we have, our adversaries know to put us in situations which make it difficult for us legally. And I think if they weren't doing that, we wouldn't need so many lawyers advising us on how to conduct these wars. Once upon a time, we didn't have that many lawyers. Back in October 1973, back in the Six-Day War, there weren't that many legal questions. They didn't need too many lawyers like me.
But now it's, the legal issues are huge.
Are very dominant, and in many ways, one could argue that these terrorist organizations get more bang for their buck, so to speak, deliberately bringing about a situation where civilian casualties are incurred and using those for propaganda benefit, for diplomatic benefit against Israel, which one could say perhaps strategically is more of a threat to Israel, even to the in relation to the military threat that these organizations can pose.
What about the diplomatic aspect of this? So you've got David brings up the point, and as everybody's really touching on this, you've got an enemy that will utilize civilians as shields. They will utilize a hospital as a base to launch missiles, and then Israel tries to respond. I mean, we've defended Israel's interests before international tribunals, even at the International Criminal Court in The Hague. We'll win the case. But the damage inflicted upon Israel is within the court of public opinion. And as a diplomat, you've got to be able to respond to that.
Yeah, well, actually, if you look today at the map that was just released by the IDF, of the 150,000 missiles Hezbollah planted, many of them in houses in villages in southern Lebanon. You understand, first of all, the strategy is to hide behind civilians. Now, from what we've seen, and we've seen it together, you, I, and Jordan were together in Israel during the Gazan War, 2008, we saw actually Hamas militants hiding inside ambulances. They took out of the ambulances the nurses and the doctors, and they went in with weapons and really fought through the ambulances. We saw the Hamas militants walking with children in the Gazan streets in order to fight the Israelis and not to have the Israeli soldiers being able to fight them. I believe that what the ACLJ has been doing since then, which is to expose the real face of the terrorists, the real strategy, we called it Hollywood. They were playing a game for the foreign media, is exactly what should be done. We have to expose it. We have to show what they're planning to do is part of the lessons learned from the past wars. Yeah. They're hiding behind it. They're trying to have the Israeli missiles that will hit missiles kill civilians. And by that, they're going to try to have the international public opinion turn against Israel.
So, but the reality is, if the scenario Rami paints becomes reality, which there's no basis to believe it would not become reality, that makes Israel's job that much more difficult, not only defending itself internally, but defending itself externally.
I shudder to think of what a future Lebanon war will look like for that reason, because Israel will have to protect itself on a predicted rate of something like 1,500 missiles falling on Israel, on population centers every single day. That's incredible. That's like saturation point. And the IDF will have to counter that like very rapidly in the initial days of the war. And just to think what that will inflict on the other end, on the other side, unavoidably. That we have to prepare the world for that kind of scenario.
And I think a lot of that is preparing the world.
That's the ideology, learning that most ideologies would not thrive by saying, let's bring the war to a school. So most ideologies would say, we keep the school out of the war as much as possible. That's like the last place, or the hospital. But if you take the battle and your ideology proudly proclaims, put the target at the school, put the target at the hospital, and that can survive. And a mentality that takes, you've got to, again, educate people. I think, as David just said, you have to prepare them for what you will have to do to ultimately take this out. Because if people have been indoctrinated to think it's okay to put their kids in harm's way like that, to use their kids' school as a first line of defense instead of the last, or the hospital as the first line of the war instead of the last, you've got a different enemy than most of us can even fully comprehend. It's not the mindset of the military versus military, or the warrior against warrior. It's the kid shielding a terrorist who is being propped up by a prince and being propped up by a foreign government. And so our support of Israel, standing with Israel, is so important. We have to have our allies, our real allies as well, not just the economic, just not just the countries we do business with, but who is going to be there at the end of the day that would shed blood for you and vice versa? Who are you going to actually stand up for? And there's got to be countries around the world that you say, okay, we will do that. And you have to do it diplomatically as well.
Right now, as the American Center, what we have to do and what we are doing, we are building the defense. We know that one day we will be back at the International Criminal Court. We will be back at the UN defending the interests of Israel in the next Lebanon war. The writing is on the wall because we know what they're going to do, and we know what the charges against Israel are going to be. It's going to be civilian deaths, unnecessary civilian deaths, crimes against humanity, and all the charges that have been built against Israel at the International Criminal Court and the UN in the Gaza wars of the past. So we know the blueprint that Hezbollah is using. So right now at the American Center, we are putting together the infrastructure, the research, and the data that will serve as the basis of a defense of a war that has yet to come. And that's why we have to always be on our toes in this region of the world.
In military action, there's this discussion of preemptive strikes, where you take a preemptive move in order to prevent what would be a greater harm. In the legal arena, when you're dealing with this kind of conflict, you also have to take preemptive action. And as Stuart just laid out, we're taking that preemptive action right now. So we've got a team within the ACLJ, our office in Jerusalem, our offices in Washington, lawyers in New York, around the globe, literally working right now as we speak, as we're coming to you, working on what will be preemptive measures to respond to what inevitably will be an outcry from the well-orchestrated and unfortunately well-organized, and as Jordan said, with the princes that are backing it up, well-financed opposition to Israel. Why should the United States be defending Israel? What would your answer be?
Well, I think there are multiple answers, and I think that in terms of strategic interest, there is no question that Israel is the front line in a war that's been going on, maybe that people in America or in Europe aren't really aware of, but people in the Middle East are very well aware of. It is a generational war. They have designs on conquest. And certainly, we saw also the opening of the documentary, America's the Great Satan. It's not just Israel's flags being burned, it's America's flags being burned. Israel is seen as a proxy for America there, because Israel is, in many ways, is representative of freedom, of a liberal Western civilization and culture that they're trying to wipe out.
Well, that's going to do it for the broadcast today. And what a special day this is. Mark this one down on your calendar. May 14th, 2018, the day the United States moved its embassy to Jerusalem, the eternal capital of the Jewish people of the state of Israel. We'll see you tomorrow.
The life of an American pastor hangs in the balance. Pastor Andrew Brunson is on trial in Turkey. We're working directly with the State Department and alongside members of Congress. The Vice President is involved. Stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Fight for the freedom of Pastor Andrew. It's time to bring an end to this sham trial. It's time for Pastor Andrew to come home. Add your name to our petition right now online at aclj.org.